I've always just kind of gone, well, I'm going to make the best of the situation. And yes, I mean, there has obviously been very hard times, you know, when you're dealing with high levels of chronic pain day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. It can be very difficult to get up and stump up and summon up the energy. I mean, I've been left with chronic fatigue. So the energy thing is a big thing. It's like some days I power down like an iPhone. It's like there is zero energy left. We are tapped out. We have probably gone into negative energy. But mindset is massive. You know, if you can control your mind, I do believe that it helps to move you forward.
Welcome to Perth Reconnect. We're here in the Beyond Rest Chill Out space. I'm your host, Ben Dunnan. With me is my co-host, as always, Matt Puccinelli. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Good. And our special guest today is Bree Hogan, who is the owner of Starbright Warrior. How you doing today?
I'm doing really well.
Took us a few guys, but yeah, we got there eventually.
We got there. It's good to, I mean, we're obviously old friends. I mean, you've been floating with us for what, 6 years now?
Yeah, we were just talking about that before. I think it was within 3 months of you guys opening the doors here in Perth that I first started floating. So, I mean, your VIP, I don't know, whatever you're kind of calling it, club.
We call it super floaters.
There you go, super floaters.
Yeah. Yeah, we've labelled you.
Yeah, I'm a super floater. Yeah,
generally the first name that comes up in my head when people mention, oh, so are there people who float really regularly? And I always think of you straight away. I'm always like, yep, Bree Hogan. Yeah.
Yeah, you're in our top five. Top 10.
Oh, well,
everyone's
I need to go for number one then.
Everyone who floats is in our top five. You're definitely.
Well, hang on, I'm competitive here. So, like, who do I need to take out?
All right, you're number one.
Actually, there's a couple of old fellas really tear it up. Mm-hmm. One's a psychologist. What's his name again?
At Wembley?
Yeah. Well, they've all kind of gone.
Oh, the Jungian. I know his name. It's on the tip of my tongue. Apologies if you're listening.
Well, I know there's Bruce. That's one. He always floats Sundays. He's always chasing Jules. They have a good relationship.
Oh, not Dennis.
That's the one. Dennis. He's a psychologist.
Yeah. He does a lot of like sports psychology and performance psychology. I've had many chats with him. He's interesting.
Hopefully, guys, you're happy about being named on, you know, on air and all that kind of thing.
We'll deal with that later.
I'll cut out their last names.
Yeah, we like dance. It's like a blurb. Now that I'm focused on your socks, what are they? Like, seriously.
They're owls.
Oh, they're owls.
They're owls, yes. All right. Ben's looking at my anklet socks that have owls on them.
Yeah.
Just to give context to everyone.
Yeah, if this was the 19th century, then it would be inappropriate for me to look at your ankles.
Yeah.
Times have changed
and you're obsessed with my socks.
If it was the 19th century, to be fair, Ben, I don't think we'd be recording a podcast. So I think you're all right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit. I mean, I'd like to explore what got you into floating and what made you sort of pursue this. But at the moment, I'm more curious about your company and what you do. Because I understand it just from an essential oil point of view. And I'm kind of curious, can you put essential oils in your meals?
Depending on the quality that you're using, yes. But they have to be therapeutic, medicinal grade essential oils. And that's all that I work with. So if you're just going to the supermarket and getting oils off the shelf, no. But it depends on what you're working with. But to address your original question, which was around what is Starbright Warrior and I guess how I got started, was that kind of what you're asking me?
Yeah.
For the uninitiated, I actually haven't talked to you about this. What is Starbright? Is it an essential oils company or is it something beyond that?
No, so it's beyond that. So basically, in terms of, I guess, my mission and what I do, it's really around teaching women how to prevent and put out health spot fires so they can thrive in life. And, you know, that's been a mission that's, I guess, evolved over a number of years, and it's come about because of my own challenges with chronic illness. And I guess that at the end of the day is how Starbright Warrior was born. It started out as a blog and it's become more of a movement. And as my skills have evolved, I mean, I can give you all my qualifications, but at the end of the day, I believe people will remember my story versus, you know, all of the certifications that I could list. You know, it's really been born out of experience, and everything that I do today has come about because of me getting to a better place of health in my own journey. So the name Starbright Warrior, Starbright is the middle name that I gave myself at the age of 5 because my parents did not give me a middle name.
It's a pretty cool middle name.
Yeah, it was. Good it choice. Is. It, I know. And it's one that stays with you. So my parents deprived me. I took matters upon myself to give myself a name. And of course, it's followed me throughout my life. And then Warrior is very much because that's what I needed to tap into and become because, you know, when life threw me lemons, I've been very much determined to make lemonade. You know, the backstory is that when I was 24 years old, I fell critically ill with an autoimmune neurological condition known as Guillain-Barré. So it is French. What it does is it basically attacks your myelin sheath. And so your myelin sheath is, you can consider your nerves your communication center in your body. And the myelin sheath is the insulation that covers those nerves, and it strips that. So you imagine that you get a pair of pliers and you get an electrical cable and you strip that outer coating on the electrical cable, exposing that bare cable underneath. And that's what happened to me, to my entire system. So my comms network basically shut down. And as a result of that happening, within 2 days, I was completely paralyzed. So I was in critical care unit in the hospital, not here in Perth. I'm originally from Melbourne. You know, my parents were told to prepare for the worst, that, you know, it was really dire straits with what was happening to me. They were basically supporting every single system as it was shutting down, you know, in my body. So I ended up with a nasogastric tube down to feed me because I choked on lettuce and my retired nurse mother had to perform the Heimlich manoeuvre on me. I had my eyes taped shut at night because my blink reflex had stopped working and I had double vision in both eyes.
Oh, wow.
you know, they were monitoring my breathing. Luckily, I missed the ventilator. I was very, very lucky. But I was told originally I'd be in hospital for 9 months minimum plus rehab. I was out in 6 weeks walking on legs that I still couldn't properly feel. So it's been a pretty epic journey, and, you know, I'm here today and I'm no longer paralyzed. It's fantastic, but I still live with ongoing neuropathy, which is paralysis that comes intermittently, chronic nerve pain, which is full body. Again, it's tampered down to what it was even a couple of years ago, but, you know, it's been a big journey, and I was in a wheelchair and using walking sticks up until 2 years ago. So
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And this is 14 years post diagnosis I'm at this year.
Oh, that long ago?
Yeah, I was 24.
Wow.
We do the maths. I'm nearly 38. It was November 2005. It was actually Remembrance Day when everything for me started to hit the fan. The proverbial Mack truck hit.
You still look like you're in your late 20s.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I love you. Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. And that has come down to things that I've shifted over the years, being diet, lifestyle, you know, my use of essential oils, all of those things. Because, yeah, you would think that with what's gone on in my body, that really from a, you know, looking physically and all of that, that I should probably be aged a lot more. Maybe sometimes things internally don't work so well, but, you know, we're doing pretty good. Okay. We're moving. We're doing good.
and how often do these sort of serious things pop up? Like were you talking about? Sorry, I can't.
You'll
excuse my lack of terminology here. But
not
when
a problem.
You, just when shit hits the fan is how I would word it. Like when things go bad, how often does that happen? On average.
Thankfully now, not as much. I mean, if I get stressed, my body's default position is to throw up, you know, something. And for me, it will usually be what I describe as intermittent paralysis. So all of a sudden I will lose a leg or hands, like my peripherals, like my hands and my feet. Oftentimes, I mean, you guys can't see me, but I'm sitting here with my legs crossed and I actually can't tell you now which foot is which because that sensation is gone. It's turned off without me actually moving my legs or physically looking at, you know, my body to go, oh, okay, so that foot is there and that foot is there. I just can't tell. So that is still not working quite right. But yeah, if I get stressed, my body's default position is to, you know, increase the chronic pain and throw up the neurological crap, as I call it. And so that's something I very much have to manage, because I have a huge drive to go and do things. My brain says, let's go. And my body goes, whoa, there, Mizzy, let's put the brakes on for a second. So, you know, I've had to learn how to try and balance that over the years. But in terms of the really big stuff, that was, you know, very much in the early days, and then throughout those intervening years where, you know, I'm talking, I was living with incredibly high levels of pain 24/7. As I said, I still live with pain. I actually don't know what it's like to not live with chronic pain, but it's certainly not at the levels that it was years ago. So we're happy. We're good.
And we, huh? So what tools do you put in place? You've explained diets. Obviously you use floating. Mm-hmm. I assume you use meditation. I mean, what is your structure, your daily structure to avoid all these issues?
Yeah, well, as you say, it's really important, because, I mean, modern medicine saved my life, but over the longer term, it's been very much exploring the holistic modalities, and I believe that they can exist very much together. You know, there is synchronicity. It's not saying one is better than the other, or that you do one at the, you know, to and forsake all others. I think that can be quite unbalanced, but I do believe that, you know, over the years, the holistic therapies for me has been arguably what's kind of, you know, really kept me going, and I've seen the most advances with, because, you know, once I was out of that critical phase and I was in a chronic pain cycle, it was just, well, from a medical standpoint, what medication can we give you?
Mm.
That was what it was, you know, just pushing different medications, and they all have side effects. And so that compromised my body in other ways over the years, you know, with huge digestive problems and then hormonal imbalances. You know, there's been so many things over the years that have either stemmed from the initial Guillain-Barré or side effects as a result of different treatments. So, yeah, I acupuncture for years. I don't do it so much anymore, but acupuncture was a lifesaver. I say that my acupuncturist was my maintenance man. He certainly kept me, you know, kind of ticking along. What else? Basically, there's not too many things that we wouldn't have tried. As I said, my mum's a retired nurse, but she's always been very holistic minded, and she's a vegan, but she's like, I would slap fish over you if I thought that would help you to get better. I went plant-based, what would it be, 8 years ago now, again, for medical reasons, but over time ethics do start to come into play, but it was for medical reasons, and I've never looked back on that. That caused a huge shift for the positive for me. As you said, float tank therapy, essential oil usage now, you know, just making sure I carve out time in my day, whether it's to go to the beach, and I love the beach, so being near the water is just great for me. Mm. And grounding and negative ions, and it's eating well, and it's managing your mindset as well, because, you know, if you have a really negative mindset, and trust me, it would be easy to go down that path when you've got the proverbial shit hitting the fan. It would be easy to go down that path, but, you know, I believe that you have a choice, and you need to make a choice sometimes. And, you know, when I was 24 years old and they're telling me that you're going to take years to recover if you ever fully recover at all, you know, you're thrown into a debilitating chronic pain cycle. You know, I had to learn to redo all of baby's first milestones as a young adult: crawl, walk, talk, feed myself, dress myself, all of those most basic human tasks I had to learn how to do all over again at 24. So, you know.
Talk.
Yep, talk. Yeah, I slurred because I was paralyzed, so everything was shut down. And your body, you in your head know what to do, but your muscles and things have no memory of it. So I, in my head, knew how to talk, and you could kind of understand me to an extent, but I was slurring. So I had to learn how to speak properly again. I had to learn how to walk properly again. And in my head, I knew how to walk, but no messages were getting through. So my body didn't know how to walk, so I had to be taught how to walk all over again, taught how to feed myself. I had massive stroke spoons and things to feed myself and all that kind of thing. So, you know, imagine being hit with that when you're 24 years old, having to do all that over again and being told that you may never fully recover. So I believe that, you know, I made a choice very early on that I was going to thrive regardless of what happened, because if this is my lot in life, then it's not going to, you know, I guess, take away, if you want to look at it like that, any more than what had already in effect happened. So that's what happened.
Were you always a determined character before this, or did that transform? You always had those kind of values and motivations before?
Yeah, and ironically, I mean, I say ironically because, you know, I was climbing the corporate ladder. It was, you know,
sure,
determined, all of this kind of stuff. I was like, I was going for it. And on the one hand, that probably is what helped push me into the illness, because, I mean, when you're burning the candle at both ends and when you're so driven sometimes and you're not properly taking care of yourself, you can throw up the environment for stuff to happen, for chronic illness to manifest. But then equally, it's those same characteristics that I had to draw on to save my life.
Yeah, if that's the case, it's quite ironic that what that perseverance that put you in there is what got you out of it as well.
Exactly. You know, and then equally over the years though, it's also because you forget, and whilst you're grateful for, you know, second chances and things like that, it's very easy to become complacent again. You know, I nearly threw myself into another flare, probably within 12 months of being out of that initial kind of time period, because I was back at work and I started pushing it again. And all the symptoms flared right back up and I had the paralysis coming back in with a vengeance, and everyone was like, you need to slow down. You're about to throw yourself into another full-on episode of Guillain-Barré again. So, you know, it's all about sometimes you need those Mack trucks and sometimes you need those wake-up calls to actually take that proactive action when it comes to your health.
Do you feel with your, for lack of a better term, persevering energy, do you feel that you're wiser with it now? So rather than, you know, burning the candle at both ends, you manage it and control it in a much more wiser way now that you've gone through those experiences?
Oh, for sure. But as I said, I mean, I still have to regulate myself because I am quite ambitious. And now particularly that I've got, you know, much more of my movement and my independence back. As I said, I was in a wheelchair until 2 years ago and using walking sticks. So you can imagine once I'm out of that, I'm like, woohoo, here we go, off we go. And you know, family and that are like, this is fantastic, but oh my gosh, can you just slow down? You don't have to make up for all the last X number of years. And I'm like, yes, we do, off we go. And so I do have to still be very mindful. And, you know, if my mum was listening to this, she'd be there going, she doesn't slow down. But I am much more mindful of it than I was, you know, even just a few years ago, that putting in place those practices and watching for those triggers and going, okay, we've been doing a bit too much. Things are flaring. Tone it back, because, you know, they say put your own oxygen mask on first. If you don't have that on, then you can't actually help other people. So I can't do what I want to do if I take myself out of the equation.
Yeah.
I noticed in past tense you say I, and then in present you say we.
Oh, do I?
Yeah. Is there a reason for that? I mean, has it become like Team Bree as opposed to I'm on my own past tense? Can you explore that? Have you thought about this? Because that's what I picked up on.
That's getting very trippy. Freudian.
Yeah. I'm not going for psychoanalysis. So just something I observed.
No, that's really interesting. And I suppose as my community has evolved, it becomes more about the we and less of the I. So yeah, it's a good observation. I've never actually cottoned onto it like that before. He's listening. Yeah, he's listening.
He's
psychoanalyzing
right
me now.
As long as you're not Irish.
Well, somewhere back in my genealogy, yes.
I'm pretty sure everyone was Irish back in the day.
Surname Hogan, it's Irish. First name Bree, it's Irish.
Yeah, it's like people go, what's your background? I'm like, yeah, Polish English, but I'm pretty sure that, like, I know there was I had a grandfather. Who I was driving through Victoria doing wine tours, and there was a burnt out old police station, and my mum goes, oh, see that? Your great grandfather actually burnt that police station down. He was a drunken Irishman that was like using a spare prison cell to like burn like a pig, like put a pig on a stick. And then he fell asleep while burning it, and, yeah, it just burnt the whole place down because he was drunk.
I can imagine a lot of people would make jokes around that. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Police station burning down and he was cooking a pig.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I'd imagine that, yeah, a few people would unpack that. You can make a whole comedy routine out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a comedy. The story itself is a comedy. Like a drunk Irishman police officer passes out, burns down police station while burning a, like putting a pig on a stick in a spare cell.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a story.
Anyway. On a complete side note. Yeah.
We digress.
It's okay. I digress all the time.
Yeah. So back to you. Okay. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to empower women. I mean, do you do this full time?
Yeah, I do now. So I left my corporate career in... Okay, so it was January last year. So what's that, 2018, so that I could pursue my passion full time. Because, I mean, you know, they say we're only here once or in this physical body once. And so whilst sometimes we do need to do things for a particular reason, I do believe that we need to try and find a way to do what it is that we love doing, not just what we have to do. So I was lucky enough to be able to exit the corporate world, which, look, they were fantastic to me, and I was good at what I did, but I didn't enjoy it. And, you know, I say the silver lining in my health crisis was that I actually tapped into something that I am truly passionate about, because I never would have gone down the health and wellness path had I not got sick. You know, my father is a chartered accountant. He was a partner with one of the big four accounting firms, and my mum was the nurse. And so I've now followed, I guess, more that her train now, because it's that the health side of things. Yeah. So yeah, left my corporate job in January of last year to pursue this full time. And this is, essential. I'm an essential oil educator. I'm a resilience and health coach. So from a qualification perspective, I've studied extensively, with the Institute of Integrated Nutrition out of New York. And I've got specializations in gut health and hormone health. You know, I'm a certified essential oil coach. I've done a master diploma of aromatherapy, and I also now do an aroma touch massage practice. So it's all, you know, banners together.
So you mentioned gut health. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, gut health has become the big thing nowadays. You know, our gut is our second brain, and it's where the majority of our immune system resides. And I've had a lot of gut problems over the years, and I do believe a lot of that for me stemmed, one, likely from what I was eating. Although I always thought I was pretty healthy, like probably a lot of people, you think what you're doing is actually okay until you start to look into it and realize that maybe you can do things better. But equally, the medications that I was on were causing a lot of side effects, and one of them in particular did strip my digestive system and resulted in irritable bowel syndrome. So my digestive system was basically very, very compromised, and the pipes were either blocked or unblocked. We'll just leave it at that. And so I had to figure out a way to correct that, because I do believe that if you provide the body with the conditions, it can heal itself, you know, but it's about figuring out what that is, removing the triggers and bringing in the healthy practices to enable that to occur so that the body can come back to homeostasis. And it's not a magic pill. I can see why people go down the medical path, because a pill can often, well, seemingly correct things faster, but it doesn't really. It's often a band-aid solution. So it took me the better part of 3 years to heal my gut, but it's great now. It doesn't mean I don't have problems that can still come up now and again, particularly if I eat gluten or something, but it's really, really good.
So hypothetically, let's role play. I'm a client here and I've come and seen you. Are you going to give me a jar and make me just sort of defecate in a jar, and then you analyze the stool?
No. I'm not going to scientifically look at any of your poop.
Okay.
No.
That's important to me personally.
To scientifically look at your poop? Yeah, well,
I'm very self-conscious about that. That's a personal thing. Like, I just don't think it needs to be examined. Just
say go and work with your GP and do a poop sample with them.
No, just x-ray me. Like, take a blood sample. You don't need to look at my poo.
No, I mean,
you're gonna have a special bond with Ben for that.
Yeah, Ben, awesome. Good luck.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I have the utmost utmost respect for the medical profession, and, you know, I'm never about, I'm not doing their job, and equally they're not doing my job. You know, doctors will openly say that they only get 10 to 15 minutes with a patient, so they can, you know, they're oftentimes in there and they're just treating immediately what is presented to them, whereas a health coach can come at it more holistically and look at the person from an entire mind, body, spirit perspective. We often talk about things like primary and secondary food, primary being your things like relationships, spirituality, how happy you are in your job, you know, what's going on with your family. Secondary is actually the food that you put in your mouth. And yes, the food that you put in your mouth is important, but they say you can have all the kale in the world, and if you're not happy, if you're out of balance in core areas in your life, then it's not really going to do a huge amount of good for you. So it really is about looking at the person in its entirety and going, what's going on in your life? What is truly going on in your life? And let's unpack the layers and even go right back to basics with someone. I mean, the number of people that don't hydrate properly in a day, you know, hydrating your system is hugely important, but a lot of people don't do that enough. And that can make a huge transformation in someone's life. It's not about being complex and going, you need to do this, this and that. It's really oftentimes taking it back to basics. How's your sleep? You know, what are you eating in a day? Are there some adjustments that could be made? And again, where necessary, working back in with their GP, their practitioner, and saying, okay, well, you need to go and have some tests done. You need to go and speak to your GP. I can help you out with this, but you know, you still need to be taking proper care of yourself over on this front as well.
Yeah. It's all about those one percenters. I mean, it's fascinating. You apply that to every aspect of your life, and something as simple as, because I struggle a lot with sleep, and my brother got me onto using one of those, what do you call it, the night mask?
Sleep apnea mask.
No, not
just a, like just a blindfold.
Like a blindfold, yeah. Like an eye mask.
Simple, right?
Yeah. And like just blacks everything out because there's so much light coming in through my windows, regardless whether I keep the curtains closed or not. Matt, we talked about this with blockout curtains or blind.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah.
So, things like that. I noticed it made a difference. Didn't help last night because I caught my son's bug, the little bastard. He was sneezing on everything, all right? Like he's just drooling and sneezing on everything. And, you know, I got a little bit flu-y, you know. But that aside, like I noticed that actually helped blocking my eyes.
Yeah, and it's simple things like that, and it's just trying it because each person is bio-individual. So what works for you won't necessarily work for me, but it's about just trying those simple things and not making it complicated and going, okay, did that help you? Yes, it did. Fantastic. Is there something else that could help you? Maybe, maybe not. But it's just about making those tweaks. And it has to be doable because if, you know, if someone says, oh, I've not been exercising in months and now I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week. Are you really? Like, is that really realistic to put that kind of pressure on yourself? What about 5 minutes a day walking around a park or something like that and starting out with that and then integrating that, and as you start to get the benefits, then you can increase the time.
Well, that's actually the key point of changing your habits is you work in increments.
Absolutely.
And that's what I was reading in this article that someone gave me, and it talks about gymnastics going to the gym a lot because it's an easy analogy. And it talks about not going and setting yourself a goal like, oh, I'm going to deadlift 200 kilos by the end of the week or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. It's just a case of just going in there and picking something up and putting it back down and then walking away, and then you work in increments. And I don't know if I discussed this in another podcast or not. You can probably correct me, Matt. You've been on every podcast. There was the guy from the Modern Family. He was from he's also from Married with Children. You'd know that.
Oh,
Ted Bundy. He was like, yeah. Al Bundy.
Oh, yeah. Al Bundy. What's his name?
The guy in the pig.
Hang on, I'll pull that up.
Anyway,
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name right now. This
particular cat, it turns out he's got a black
belt. Ed O'Neill.
That's right, yeah.
Ed O'Neill. Okay, right. Turns out he's got a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I'm like, get the hell out of town, man, because I know damn well it is very hard to get a black belt in BJJ. It's not like other martial arts. Yeah. Like people walk around with black belts, it doesn't mean a thing. You got a black belt in BJJ, you're serious news. And the way I heard he got it was he would rock up. He'd just show up, get to the car park, then drive away. Then he'd rock up to the car park, get to the front door, then go back to the car and drive away. Then he'd go into the front door, like get through the door, then walk away. And then he'd go and do a class and eventually just kept on going step by step by step. And now he's a black belt in BJJ. And I look at him, he looks just comical. But, yeah, it turns out he's a weapon. And
one small action each day, consistency compounds, right? And they say you've got to hold that end vision because, again, the gym analogy, that's why so many people start the gym in New Year and then within a week have dropped it because they want to see those instantaneous results. And when they're not happening, it's like, okay, well, we're done. But it's like you've got to hold the vision. So they say, you know how where it's like, oh, someone's an overnight success or their transformation happens overnight. It doesn't actually. No. It's just that that's at the point at which you see it. Whereas it might have taken 9 months, 12 months, however many months. It's like, but they held that vision because they did one small step each day.
I'm curious. So with that said, you know, Ed O'Neill's experience learning BJJ and persevering in that way, you know, that's – there's little – you know, relative little consequence if he weren't to do it. Whereas in your case, Bree, you were, you know, deprived of, you know, basic human function and, you know, persevering through that. I'm sure being a human being, there were times where that, you know, that perseverance was a struggle. Like, how did you maintain that? Like, I'm very curious to know in those moments where, you know, you're struggling the most, what resources or what mindfulness or what tools did you use to, you know, retain that spirit back or, you know, draw it back? What was, you know, what kept you going?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question and I've had that quite a bit over the years and I think it comes down to, I mean, you know, I believe the way I was raised and the support systems in place as well because, I mean, I've seen people in hospital where they've not had any support system and it makes a massive difference because, you know, that sense of community and just people being there for you and willing to do whatever it takes to help you on your recovery versus if someone's lying there in a hospital bed and they've got no one visiting them, they've got no one, you know, rallying around them other than the nurses and that. I mean, it has a big impact, I believe, on your mind and ultimately on your recovery. And, I mean, we had all the self-help books and things in our house growing up. As I said, my mum was quite spiritually minded. So, you know, I had read a lot of those kind of things all throughout my teens and into my 20s. And again, I just believe that that determination was always there. I was like, well, no, this is not going to stop me. This is a potential setback. And yeah, I don't know. I've always just kind of gone, well, I'm going to make the best of the situation. And yes, I mean, there has obviously been very hard times, you know, when you're dealing with high levels of chronic pain day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, it can be very difficult to get up and stump up and summon up the energy. I mean, I've been left with chronic fatigue. So the energy thing is a big thing. It's like some days I power down like an iPhone. It's like there is zero energy left. We are tapped out. We have probably gone into negative energy. But mindset is massive. You know, if you can control your mind, I do believe that it helps to move you forward because we may not always have the best decisions put in front of us or the best circumstances, but I truly believe, and I know people won't always agree with this, but we can choose how we react. And I guess a lot of the emotions that we feel, there are things within our control. And, you know, I had to go to gratitude and find, well, even it might be the smallest thing. Like I could move my little finger that day, or I remember in hospital when some feeling was starting to return and my doctors, they took the cues from my family because my family used humor a lot. We've always used humor to get through things and people would look at us in hospital and think, oh my gosh, but that was our coping mechanism. It always has been. And the doctors took their cues from my mum in particular. And they told me one day if I was a horse, they would have shot me by that point because I was so sick. And I remember I had a bit of sensation in my middle finger and it took me about 5 minutes, but I got that middle finger up and flipped them the bird. And, you know, that was kind of a prime moment. It's like my spirit will not be broken. My body in that moment might be, but my spirit was not. That was within my control because my brain was fully functioning. My body was not, but my brain was. So I knew that that's what I had to tap into. And again, not being easy. Obviously, there's moments where you scream and you shout and all of that, but I get back up on the horse and keep going and know that there's always the next moment and the next day, and I'm here to live my best life. And if that meant that I would be forever in a wheelchair, then that would be the case. If it means that I've always got chronic pain to some degree, then that is the case. But it's not going to stop me, basically. I mean, no one ever said that life was meant to be easy, and my mum does joke and say that I must have ticked challenge in every box associated with that coming into this world because it's been that. But, you know, having said that, like whilst I could say, yeah, it'd be fantastic to throw back things, to give back to sender things like the chronic pain and all of that, the lessons that I've learned along the way, not a chance. You know, I am so different and I believe I'm a much better person because of, you know, my journey, and I can absolutely celebrate and find the joy in the last 14 years and look at where I am now and go, I'm doing a pretty bloody good job, and there'll be still more to come.
Yeah. And there's a lot of irony in that. I think that's it's so funny as a species. I don't know if it's just you or me. I'm not sort of saying that I'm anything like you, but it's kind of one of those things, like my personal experiences, what has made me a better person is through suffering. Any negative experience I've had in my life has made me a better person. Mm. Anything that I've just had thrown on me that has been spoiled upon me has made me less of a good person. Like a kind of, I don't know how to.
You probably appreciated it less versus when you fought for something and you've, as long as you've learnt the lessons from the challenges, because obviously if we keep repeating the same mistakes time and time again.
Yeah. That's what I hear. I've heard that in different contexts. Like I've heard a couple of colleagues that were, I made sure they were gifted certain free services, and you're kidding me.
Ben's receiving a phone call as we're podcasting.
During a podcast, and that's like the first time I didn't turn off my phone. I hope that wasn't for a job.
I'll edit that out.
If it's important, it'll go to voicemail.
No. Maybe I should have taken the call on the podcast. And just
hey, you're on a podcast right now.
You're on.
Hello, Mr. Dunnan. We would like to bring you in for an interview. I'm on a podcast right now. You want to say anything?
This is the police right now.
Mate, we're outside. Come out here, mate.
You're involved for questions.
Why did we default to the police? What have you done, Ben?
Recently, nothing. I've been pretty good. Last month.
Just putting that out there, people. Recently, he's been good.
Past month, he's been all right.
Last month, I've been good. Look, no, I've done my fair share of
dumb things.
Yeah. Naughty things, dumb things. But
just so you know, Ben, we're recording right now.
Done all the dumb things.
Actually, I just got my police clearance through, so that's okay. I've updated.
Yeah, wiped a bit of sweat away when that email came in. And you're like, what the fuck?
No, I got a clean record. But like anybody, you do your silly things. Now, what were we talking about?
We're talking about struggle and you know,
stuff.
Comfort. Well, I guess like comfort being perishable to the soul.
Yeah. So yeah, I hope I never experience or have too many loved ones that go through what you go through, but yeah, at the end of the day, this struggle, it's so cliche, but there is no progress without struggle, right?
Oftentimes, yeah.
I'm actually going up to Cairns in July, taking my daughter up there to see my eldest brother Sean. He's got scleroderma, which is a rare form of arthritis.
Okay,
he's the only male known case to have this. And this is like, yeah, everyone always goes, okay, scleroderma, got it, right. It's a rare form of gangrene that builds up in the blood system and it clots the blood.
Wow.
So if it gets in a vital, if it flares up in a vital organ,
he's in trouble.
He's straight out of going my way. But the interesting thing is when I started Googling it, was that the average life expectancy is 11 years after being diagnosed. He was diagnosed over 20 years ago. Mm. He used to live in Melbourne. The cold weather seemed to create an issue, yep. so he moved to Cairns to go to warmer weather. But he's a typical, like, truck driver, sort of, like, hard yakker, no mucking about, sort of I'm not quitting kind of guy. Yep. We'll drive him through Fitzroy a few years ago, and it was just Fitzroy's gone really nice, as you would know. I'm driving through, and, like, I remember spending my childhood in Fitzroy, and it was rough as guts. And now it's all fancy and preppy, and he's... I'm like, wow, look how nice this place has gone. He's like, yeah, it's gone to the bloody dogs, mate. And I'm like, all right, that sums up Sean. So, yeah, it's kind of that mentality, that attitude, and he doesn't want to muck around. When I said, oh, when I come up and spend time with you, I'll get a hire car. And he goes, no, you can drive my truck. I'm like, well, what are you going to drive? And he goes, I'll ride my motorbike. I'm like, your hands, man. Like, you can, his hands are like black. Yeah. Gangrene. I'm like, how can you ride your bike? And he's like, nah, I'm good. I'll ride my bike. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
It's hard for family and friends because, I mean, you can see the struggle, but then equally, and you can't do anything about it, right? But at the same time, you also have to, I guess, accept that the person who's going through whatever it is that they're going through has got it, and not put, I guess, your own sort of limitations and things on them as well. Mm. That's a big one because... you know, the person is going through what they're going through, and I know the last thing that I often want to hear is, well, you shouldn't be doing that. And I think, well, hang on, who are you to tell me what I should and shouldn't do? Like, maybe this decision that I make is going to cause a flare, but if I've calculated that out and made that judgment call and know in my head based on past experience, you know, how my body will react, then that's a judgment call that I've made and essentially needs to be respected for the most part. Obviously, if I'm going to do something completely stupid, then then step in. But it is, it's hard. It's hard for everyone involved because people, family get protective. Like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? It's like, well, I'm living my life because that's all I can do in this moment is live my life. And if it causes a pain flare, then in my case, I've made that calculated decision.
That reminds me of the band Motley Crue. The guitarist Mick Mars has a rare form of arthritis. And I saw them a couple of years back live, and he's had arthritis for years and years and years, and they basically wheel him out on stage now. Yeah. Like he just stands still the whole time.
Yeah.
And I remember that they were, you know, he's shredding away on the guitar and the cameras were like on his hands and you just see his knuckles, they're red as, and they're flaring up and everything. And I remember like, I was just amazed at his perseverance. And then, pardon me, I saw an interview with him and they were like, you know, how do you do it? How do you play guitar and all these fast licks and everything? And he said, you know, like it's so painful, but when I'm in that mode and I'm doing my passion, like, you know, that like the pain goes away. It's not there to him. So yeah, it's another case of perseverance and mind over matter, I guess. And
as you said, he's passionate and he's happy and he's doing what he loves. So to actually probably take that away from him would cause a spiral in a direction that he would not want to go in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, especially if, say, you're a career musician and that's all you do and all you know in terms of, you know, what your life's purpose is and, you know, this disease takes it away. Like, you know, I'd imagine just like you did, you fight for it to not, no matter how hard that battle is.
Because you have to make the best out of a new reality and you have to go, okay, well, the door on that particular component of my life, you know, potentially that is closed and I'm going to open a new door and I've got to make the best of my changed reality because what existed before no longer exists anymore. And if I continue to harp on that and lament what has been lost, then I'm missing out in the present. And that is a big thing because, you know, you need to be able to find a way to move forward and make the best out of whatever it is that you've got right now. Because you keep doing the whole, well, what if, oh, it was like this, it was like that. It doesn't do your mindset any good. And that's, again, where you'll spiral.
So, like, with everything you've experienced at the moment and everything you've gone through, if things were to sort of finish up, like if you were to pass away tomorrow, would you have any regrets? Is there anything that's not complete in your life?
No. I believe very much in living in the moment and, you know, what's not been done, I can't, again, lament over what I haven't done because, well, hey, I'm dead, aren't I? So, no, I believe that I've lived life to the fullest to this point in time, and I would like to think that there is much more of that still to come. But, yeah, if I was to pass tomorrow, then I believe my soul will go off and my energy will go off and we'll be very happy. And whether I come back recycled in a different form, maybe, maybe not, but no, I'm good.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. It's like, is it a restart option or do you go on to a different adventure? I mean,
we're all energy. Does it work?
I just want it to be pain-free. But that aside, like the next chapter. cool. Well, look, thank you very much for your time, Bri. I really appreciate you coming on board and sharing your story. So thank you.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on and go floating.
Yeah, we're all pro floaters here. Yeah,
Brother. All right.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks as always.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. So this is another episode of Perth Reconnect. We're here at the Beyond Rest Chill Out Space. We look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you.